darkening the air. Let me see you playing everywhere. For your light's a shining tree. I give all I am to thee. Open my eyes to the world.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. And that was William Vitalis singing one of my favorite songs, Open My Eyes to the World. And tonight, we are going to open our eyes to way beyond the world. We're going to open our eyes to other worlds, other realms, other places of being, and other forms of life as we follow through and know in our hearts about the continuation of life, because life never dies. My guest tonight is Angela Dawn, and she is an angel. She is here to tell us about her book, and she's going to tell us mainly about her sister who passed away and how they are now still having a continual conversation through thought. The name of the book is Love Never Dies, My Sister Speaks. And Angela, I'm thrilled to have you on the show, so welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here, and I'd like to wish everybody a Happy New Year.
That's right, and tonight is Little Christmas, and this is when some of our people do celebrate Christmas. It's supposed to be the arrival of the wise men, and also it's the ending of Mercury retrograde. Yay! Things will start getting back to normal tomorrow, I promise. So, Angela, Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about you. You have a wonderful history.
Well, first of all, I would like to let everybody know that I do have an accent. I was born and raised in England, in Coventry, which is about 100 miles north of London. But I've lived in the United States for over 20 years now. Growing up in England, I was one of four children. My elder sister, Linda, who the book is about. Then there was myself and my twin sister. And we also have a younger brother, and my sister and brother still live over in England. And growing up there, I talk about it in the first chapter of my book. My parents were divorced when I was young. So my elder sister, Linda, became like a second mum to us. And so we was all very close as a family growing up. And then when I moved to the United States, as I said, about a little over 20 years ago, my family, my mom, my sister Linda, and everyone come and visit me, and I still go back over there.
That's wonderful. You know, I'm a twin. I'm a family of twins, or two sets of identical twins. So it's always interesting to talk about twins, and it's always interesting to talk about talking to our loved ones on the other side. This is Let's Find Out with Elizabeth Joyce, and I'm asking you people that have had communication with your dear loved ones that have passed over to give us a call and talk to Angela tonight. The number is 888-429-5471. That is the number to call in and ask a question. Again, it's 888-429-5471. So, Angela, how did this all begin to you? Why don't you share an overview of your book and the journey it took you to write it?
Yes, I would love to. So as I began to say, my family was very close growing up, and I was particularly close to my elder sister, Linda, because she actually moved to the United States with me, and we lived in Charlottesville, Virginia for several years before she returned back to the UK. And so we had lots of special times together. We were very close. She moved back to England.
Beautiful place. I love Charlottesville, Virginia.
It was absolutely a beautiful, idyllic town. And we were both very, very happy there. She went to the local college there.
Thomas Jefferson University?
Yes, that's right. Very good.
It's on sacred ground. It's on holy ground. It's on Cherokee land, and it's also in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yes, exactly. It was a beautiful place to live, a wonderful time in our lives. And in fact, in the book, my sister actually talks about how happy she was while she was living in Charlottesville. While she returned home to England, she did settle back down again into her everyday life back in Coventry. And she was only there a couple of years when all of a sudden our mother, who was only 66, passed away very quickly with a heart attack. And so it took us all, Elizabeth, just by shock and by surprise. And I'm sure that many of the audience listening today have lost their loved ones in a very quick and sudden, unexpected way. So, you know, you can relate to how that
felt. It does take time. You know, I had my soulmate husband who dropped dead of a heart attack, and it took me 7 years, Angela. 7 years. So it does affect us, everybody, differently. Tell us a little bit more about your sister and what she was like.
So she we all took our mother's death very painfully, but my sister Linda, she took it even harder because she felt like she didn't see any warning signs before. Maybe she could have done something to have helped Mom. So she had kept saying that she just wished that she would be with Mom. And if the doctor said that she had less than 3 months to live herself, that would be fine with her, so she could be with Mom. And I understood that the first time.
When did the doctor say that? When did she get her diagnosis? After your mother's death?
She actually got it. No, it didn't take 3 months. It was 3 years later.
Oh, I see.
So 3 years later, and during the 3 years, she really never came out of herself. She was still in pain, still very upset about Mom. And so the whole 3 years before she died, she still continued to miss her. And then during the last 3 to 4 months of her life is when she got the diagnosis that she had a terminal illness. She was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and from the time that she was diagnosed, it was literally 5.5 weeks, and she was gone. So
that's part of why she couldn't pull out of it. And sometimes, you know, if you believe that thoughts are things, that the mother's passing could have triggered all of that.
And looking back now, I see that. And listening to her through the book, when she talked to me, she does mention that quite a few times during the book, and how that is what she wanted to do. She wanted to be with Mom. And basically, as you just said, Elizabeth, she had kind of created her own destiny. And
you know, that's a part of a soulmate, too. You know, there's four different kinds of soulmates. It doesn't mean that they're romantic and going to sweep you off your feet and you're going to be happy forever. There's different kinds. And a mother and daughter can be a soulmate. Look at Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher. That just happened with them. And with my twin sister and her husband. My twin sister died on July 18th, and her husband dropped dead on July 22nd. He didn't even get to go to her funeral. So this is something that does happen, Angela, and it's still fascinating, isn't it?
It is fascinating. And in fact, when I did hear the news about Debbie Reynolds, it immediately reminded me of my own sister and my own mother. So, yes. Yeah. So when my sister passed away, it was in 2009 in the May time, I went to a spiritualist church in my hometown in Coventry. And for the audience today, I'm not sure if everybody's aware of what spiritualist churches are, but they are part of a seventh religion in the United Kingdom, where we believe in the continuation of the soul after the physical death.
Right.
And so after I went to the church, the local church, immediately after I lost my sister, in hopes to get a message from the medium there. And they have mediums that do demonstrate
to
the church. Yes. Yes.
And when did she contact you?
So it was in the July. So what happened was, in the time she had passed away from May until July, I had actually gone to several churches in the UK in hopes to learn more about contact with the spirit world and the afterlife. I found out about the Arthur Findlay College that is in just outside of London. And then I went to the college for 5 days. I took a course, and I wrote about this in my book. I wrote about all the things they teach you at the Arthur Findlay College, how you can connect with your loved ones in spirit. And I took that course. I came back to the United States. So in the July, just 3 months later, I hadn't practiced any kind of communication, but I was aware on the afterlife. I was aware how to attune to the afterlife through the teachings at Arthur Findlay College. And so one day I was sitting on a couch in July at a friend's home, early in the morning out on the West Coast. It was a different time zone to the East Coast. And all of a sudden I was crying. I felt this urge to write. I started writing very, very quickly on a piece of paper, and I started to say, I just miss you so much. I wish you were here. And that, Elizabeth, is when I heard her voice. I heard sister say, I am here helping you write this.
Now, Angela, I want to take you through this as the best I know it to explain to the audience. You went to England. You grieved. Meanwhile, the reason that your sister wasn't reaching you more or less was because she was still processing her transition between life and death, which is what we all do. So you still created a channel when you decided to take those courses at the English College in London. You created an open channel, and she came to you the moment that she could, the moment that her channel opened. That's called alignment, divine alignment. It's part of ascension. And it's wonderful that you could do that. And it can only come through, I believe, pure love. Love and desire. So she found her vibration, and there you were.
Yes, and I do want to say absolutely that we're definitely for the love and also for the vibration. But I do want to let you know and the audience know that the weeks before she was dying, the 5 weeks before leading up to her death, I did say to her before she died, you know, if there's any way you could ever come back and contact me, I won't be afraid. I'll be waiting for you.
That's called giving permission. You gave permission, and that's wonderful. Absolutely. It's the right thing to do. We all have to give permission to communicate before we really can communicate. And it's wonderful that you're saying that this came to you in a natural way, Angela, because so many people spend so much money going to mediums and others to give them their messages, when you and I know that they really can receive those messages themselves. All they need to do is get into alignment. Don't you agree?
Yes, I agree. And I agree. And I also want to say that the question I get asked a lot is this something that is a gift? Are you born with it? Is it something that I can do? Can I speak to my loved one? And I relate it to somebody that learn, like a great athlete. There are those who are gifted, and then those who practice and become very good at.
Let me tell you what I related to. I related to Barbara Streisand. You and I can sing in the shower, honey. It will never sound like her. That's really true. But actually, we all can. But are we going to take the time to express the devotion and to do the meditation and necessary training to open our channels to receive? Most of the time, Andrea, when people get a message from the other side, they say, oh, that's not true. Oh, that didn't happen. And they get very afraid. And that's going to close it down. Don't you agree?
Yes, I do agree. And in fact, my mother says in the book, because I had doubts myself at times, is this really me? Am I really listening to them? And my mother said to me on one occasion, do not doubt yourself and stop questioning the process. just
listen. And that's
listen.
Good, because I understand that that can send a vibration up to that area of where they are on the other side. That can be a little bit difficult for them as well. And the interesting thing is that she contacted you without provocation. It was a natural feeling. I had that happen with my mother. Let me take a minute to share that. I was walking around the living room, and my mother had been dead about 4 years, and all of a sudden I got very dizzy, and I had to sit down on the couch. And so I went into meditation because I recognized that it was a signal from another place. It wasn't really coming from my body. It was a signal from elsewhere. And I went into meditation, and I saw my mother immediately, and I was visiting her. I was sitting on the side of a bed that she was sleeping in a beautiful draped area that was just the bedding, and it was almost like back in Africa when they had the drapes pulled back and it was mosquito netting and all that. And she said, "How did you get here? You're not allowed to be here." And I said, "You called me and I came." And she thought that it was an amazing experience. And at the same time, when my older sister died, she was crying about how she missed her husband, had her kids brought up, and really wanted to join him. And I taught her how to do it. I said, just sit, open yourself up, open up your inner, and walk into his arms. And if it's meant to be, it will happen. And she died about 3 weeks after I gave her those instructions. So we have the power of the mind. And if you can drop your fear of death and understand that life is continual, it's easy peasy sometimes. Interesting?
Well, I do, and I also know that I no longer fear death, because I look forward to the day when I do reunite with my mother and my sister. It's not something that I would want today. I'm very happy, enjoy my life, but
you have more to
if
do.
And when that day yes, I have a lot to do, but if and well, when not if, but when that day comes, it will be something that I will not be afraid of. And that was one of the
things. If you don't struggle, I'm sure it'll be easier. I wanted to ask you, what did your family and friends think about this communication? And what did they think about the book you wrote?
Well, I'll start, first of all, talk about my brother and sister, who, again, we're very close. And after our elder sister, Linda, started to communicate with me, I try to get them, encourage them to do what I do. You know, sit and meditate and build up a communication with them. But they didn't want to do that. Not that they didn't agree with the afterlife or spiritualism. They just said that, well, you just do it, and then you tell me what they say. I'm like, okay, that works.
That's what everybody does. They don't want to take responsibility. Some of that has to do with fear, and some of that has to do with development. You can't take a kindergarten and give them a test in algebra. It has
That's
to do
right.
with development. They're where they need to be, and you are where you need to be. And I you have to honor that.
Yes. So my family and friends all say that's really neat. They say that's great, and they're very interested. But they don't have the desire or the will to actually do it. But they certainly enjoyed any messages that I would share with them, and they absolutely enjoyed my book. I did have one friend who was concerned that with my meditating 2 to 3 hours a day at my peak, I was doing that 2 to 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, she made a comment that I was spending too much time in the spirit world, probably, and not enough in this world.
And there's no such thing.
Yeah, it was funny, but I don't do that kind of meditation today because I'm back into my regular day job, so I only have weekends really to do my meditation. But I certainly enjoy it. It's a wonderful feeling when you sit and you meditate. For even if you just do half an hour a day, it's a wonderful feeling.
And according to my sources, if you really are under stress, you can do 15 minutes or 5 minutes, and it will really help you relax very, very quickly. But I'm going to tell you that 3 hours a day was probably your process of grieving. And you were reaching out for understanding, for caring, and more than likely to open yourself up to a wider array so that you could accept her impulses on an easier level. So you probably had to do that in order to have communication and keep it going. So I'm honoring that.
Yes. And of course, the more I meditated for those long periods, the deeper my meditation sessions went. And there was a few times in the book that I share how I felt that I was actually transported to the spirit world.
Right. And it's called transformation, and you can do it, but it isn't you. I want to tell you, I just wrote this book. I told you about it today, the new spiritual chakras and how to access them and work with them. And when you do work your spiritual chakras, then you have the control to drive the bus. So if you're in the middle of your head and you've got a steering wheel, then you can take your etheric body, which is your double, your physical body's double, and you can direct it to go anywhere in the planet and off the planet. And this is what's coming. This is what's coming to mankind. We are going to find that we will be communicating with other planets and other worlds in this way. And we can bring it back to our center when we're finished the meditation. And this has been going on for a long time with our great masters from India and who lived in Tibet, and all of our great masters always could do this. But now the energy since 2012 has opened up to mankind, and we are all being trained, whether we like it or not, to open up and to be able to grow. I think this is the next step in human evolution.
It's interesting you actually say that, because in my book there is a passage on where when my mother explains a little bit about the communication with the spirit world, that is actually the goal of the spirit world, is to increase the energy and consciousness on the Earth planet so it's easier for them to communicate with us.
And that is happening, Angela. I think it's going to be 50 to 100 years down the road. But just like the Wright brothers discovered the airplane in the early 1900s, we're discovering teleportation in the early 2000s or whatever. So what was the process of writing the book? You know, when I wrote Ascension, I had physical changes and opening up to new knowledge that had never been in my mind before. And I found it very healing. What was the process of you when you wrote your book?
So for me, when I would sit, as I said, 2 to 3 hours a day on the settee, and I'm a creature of habit, so I made sure I had the same seat location on the settee, and my writing pad and the pen. And I didn't want to type at a computer. I did try that once. It didn't work for me. So I would sit with a pen and paper, literally, and a notepad, and I would sit and write. And the writing would come very, very quickly. So very, very quickly, I would easily fill up 20 to 30 pages.
Yep, I know that
feeling. Sometimes it looked like scribble, and I had no idea what I was writing at the time. And then after the meditation session was up, I would then straight away, before I, lost my thought process, is look at my writing and then clearly write it out underneath decipher what some of the words were that I couldn't read.
You had to go back over it. I call that divine editing.
Editing, yes. And then I would type it up. So it took a good chunk of my day up. Monday through Friday was usually my meditation days, and I kind of took weekends off. But it became something that I loved so much that I just wanted to do it. I couldn't wait to wake up in the morning and come downstairs with my pen.
Yeah. And that went on for about 10 months. Actually, that desire, that craving, that I got to get this done, went on with me for about 10 months until I got the book done. Did that happen with you as well?
It did. And in fact, it stopped, but not when I wanted it to stop. It stopped when my sister told me the book was coming to an end. So it was in the July, and her death was the May, so the following May. I had a thought, I wonder if she's going to, how long is she going to continue this for? Is she going to stop in May when it's her year annual for passing, or would it be July? And I was just thinking, and as I was thinking these thoughts, she came through and she said, the time is getting near to finish, it will be soon. And it was in the July, it was the 1 year for July to July. And then when she stopped communicating to me.
That's interesting. I want to say something about that. I think that you were doing, and you may not have realized it, you were telling your body that you were beginning to be under a strain and you would like to have had it come to a conclusion. And so she arranged that for you because, you know, we're human. I know I did that with Ascension. When I got to the end of Ascension, there was 2 weeks that I couldn't write at all. I just kept hitting my head against the wall saying, how am I ever going to end this? And finally I did. And it was very beautiful. But I think your body needed a rest from that. And now maybe you're realigning yourself to do another book.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny that you say that, because I've been having thoughts of a new book. And so, yes. I'm having all these ideas for a novel about spiritualism and the spirit world. So let's see where that goes.
Well, let me just ask you, we're going to go to break in a few minutes, but can you give the audience some examples of what your sister talked about when you were writing the book?
Yes, absolutely. So, my sister, first of all, when she first came to me, I want to let the audience know that it was information that it was like dictation. So whatever she said, I wrote down. It wasn't until later on that I actually asked questions back. But so she first started talking about how she felt when she was the 5 weeks before she died. She started talking about how thankful and grateful she was for me and my sister to look after her. She also starts talking about, in little snippets throughout, she describes what the afterlife is like. It's not all in one particular passage. So she'll start and she will say things like, and she'll use analogies like movies or songs. So she said the first time was around, you know, remember the Wizard of Oz. You know, imagine that your life on Earth is in black and white, and then when you cross over, it's in multicolor, and your whole soul comes alive.
Yes.
And she said, with so much pleasure, she said, that you just can't wait to move along the path.
That's so beautiful. So, that really is.
Yeah.
There was one more thing as I read your book, which is called, say the title in full for me, Angela.
Yes, of course. Love Never Dies. From Heaven, My Sister Speaks.
Now, you in the book said you had a monk talk to you, a Native American Indian talk to you, several other spirits, and you said you heard something from the Lord Jesus. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yes. So initially, it was my sister Linda, and then my mom came through. And then on one occasion, it had been about three to 4 months of that daily communication with them, I felt their energy disappear, and then I thought I was just done for the day. But then I felt this other gentle energy come through, and it was this monk. And he just came through with such lovely philosophy. And so kind, and he started coming through every day. So my sister would talk first. She would go, and then the monk would come through. And I remember the monk and I had been, I've been taking this dictation from him for several weeks. And then one time he called me his friend. And I remember it made me cry because I really felt that we had become friends. And then from him, I had this Native American Indian come through. And he was such a stern man, spirit, in the way he spoke, very matter of fact. And he was talking about the land and about how the human race had treated the land. And then answering your question about Jesus, there was three times during the 12-month period that I did see Jesus. And at first, I was not going to put it in the book because I thought, well, people just think I'm going to be really crazy that I saw Jesus. I did think it was crazy that they were about my mom and my sister, but for some reason, I did think that people would say, oh, you know, you really saw Jesus. But I did. I did. And that is why I put it in the book. So on three times that I did. And the one time that sticks out the most of the three times is when I actually felt that I could reach out and touch his hair. I could actually see his hair. I could sense, smell, feel the whole of him. I write about that three times in those occasions in the book. About Jesus.
I'm going to offer something to you that's to ponder on, and then we're going to go to break. And it could be that you were with him during that time. That was one of your past lives, which is how you felt so close to him when you had the appearance. Something for you to ponder. This is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out on bbsradio.com. We're going to bring Angela back, and we're going to have more to talk about. Writing her book, talking to the other side, and her experiences with her sister who passed over. We'll be back right after this. Seeding and Nurturing the Garden of Your Soul is a book by Elizabeth Joyce. The invisible energy known as Shakti, Chi, the Holy Ghost, is not a time or a thing, but the underlying nature order of the universe, whose ultimate essence is difficult to hold or to understand. The object of spiritual practice is to become one with these energies, to become a tunnel, to become a download effect, or by whatever you choose to call them. To achieve this type of balance is known as the state of being. This book, penned by Elizabeth Joyce, Seeding and Nurturing the Garden of Your Soul, is an experience of compassion. It's a desire to help others with these troubling times through light and love shining through the darkness, and to bring love and light to all those who read the words. Seeding and Nurturing the Garden of Your Soul is not a fluffy feel-good book. It is a well-written practical guide exploring the groundbreaking philosophy of truly transforming your life. If you are serious about creating change, embracing your birthright with enthusiasm and grace, and creating your very own infinite possibilities, then this book is for you. With all the religious teachers, books, and masters of philosophy, we learn soon that they are one and the same. Spiritual practice is to become one with the soul and harmonize your inner nature in order to achieve that which you have been born to do. When you are walking your path, you innately know this because it becomes effortless. You think about it, you talk about it, you plan it, and you do it. This always involves meditation and the practice of moral practices. This book, Seeding and Nurturing the Garden of Your Soul, brings the principles which can be discerned by observing nature and can be followed as a practice. Your impact and connection to this energy force brings you a force field containing unlimited possibilities. However you practice it and use it is up to each and one individual soul. This book contains the natural laws of the universe, which will help to open your heart and guide you. Seeding and Nurturing the Garden of Your Soul is available at Amazon.com and at Elizabeth's website, www.new-visions.com. Pick it up, and you'll keep it by your bedside forever. This is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. Tonight's cosmic tip is my weekly stargazing report. This is Elizabeth Joyce with Stargazing, week of January 9th through January 15th, 2017. The week of the 9th, which holds the full moon, is quite wild. All activity this week is centered on Thursday, a day that is named after Thor, the hammer-wielding Norse god of thunder, lightning, and storms. January 12th is well named because, in addition to an extremely difficult full moon, this lineup includes a serious change for Mercury. It moves into 0 degrees Capricorn, along with a Venus-Neptune merger at 9 degrees Pisces. On Monday, Mercury ends his communication breakdown cycle before dawn, moving forward, and the moon moves into Gemini in the early afternoon. Don't worry if you feel disjointed or start small projects and don't complete them. This talkative Gemini moon continues to midday Tuesday, helping you to accomplish many quick tasks and communication. Tuesday and Wednesday set up some upsets and challenges for the full moon on Thursday. So take a deep breath as these events occur and plan your actions rather than reacting blindly to external forces. There is a challenging grand cardinal cross formed in the sky, and cardinal means sudden and forced action. Look far ahead before taking a step or making any decisions, because any reaction will lead to a reaction quickly. The Cancer full moon is up first, and although the full moon represents winding down and bringing projects to completion, this one brings us a few additional challenges. This week's full moon is a part of a four-point configuration involving the Sun, Pluto, Uranus, Jupiter, and the Moon. The Sun, Pluto, in opposition to the Moon, creates cross purposes, bringing in crisis energies. This energy gets triggered by the squaring of Jupiter, which can exaggerate the negativity, and also Uranus, the planet of explosive, fast-moving energy, which opposes Jupiter, while also squaring the Sun, Pluto, and Moon, hence the Grand Cross. With all five of these planets in the strongest energy that loves chaos and action, the best thing for you to do as you make your way through this minefield is to bring everything to a complete stop. Then you can think, regroup, and refocus. Watch what happens throughout the world with the weather, as well as with politics. On a personal level, when a grand cross, especially a grand cardinal cross, is formed, it means the universe is lighting a fire under you to kick you into high gear. This will be a true wake-up call. The moon in Cancer wants security, comfort, and safety, while Uranus wants to throw everything out and begin again in 2017, completely fresh. The Sun in Capricorn wants stability and responsibility, while Uranus in Aries wants total freedom and change. Aries' theme is don't let the grass grow under your feet. When you add expansive Jupiter to the mix, you get a formula that is ready to take on the next big adventure. Jupiter is associated with travel, foreign cultures, high philosophy, publishing, and pushing your belief system to do whatever you want to do bigger. Although you may feel a bit ragged with all this push-pull energy stimulating you, it feels good that life is finally kicking you into high gear again. Hang on for the ride. By doing this, you will be able to get a handle on the situation before Mercury re-enters practical and committed Capricorn later in the day. This stern influence asks that you conduct a serious reality check on the state of condition of your life over the next 3 weeks. The most amazing part of this demanding day is that it ends up on a quiet note with a Venus-Neptune conjunction in Pisces. This merger will soften the hard edges of Mercury's reality check while putting any challenges you experience into a more forgiving light. With romance-seeking Venus aligning with fancy-loving Neptune, you can add romance to your life, but make certain you are seeing people for who they are now, not off in some future life after they've worked through their current issues. Stay in the moment as best you can, and don't get drawn into any illusions. This powerful energy is also great for your intuition impulses, as well as your spiritual practice. The moon is in Leo on Friday and most of Saturday, so get out and enjoy yourself. Do something creative. The moon is particularly social on Saturday during the day and early evening. Things get quieter as the evening progresses. With all these energies and influences coming in on the same day, this is a week when you will certainly need to be on your toes. This is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. And now, let's get back to tonight's show. This is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. Next week, January 15th, Alina Lynn Lieberman will be my guest. Alina has devoted 2 decades inspiring others to realize inner growth through the transformation process of accessing their Akashic records. She is the author of The Principles of Dynamic Manifestation, as received through the Akashic records. Alina has personally taught and mentored several generations of teachers through her Akashic record classes. She and her sister Ronnie Reisler were the first teachers personally selected by Mary Dean Parker to teach the sacred prayer of their lineage. Many of her students are now successful authors writing about the Akashic records, as well as founding their own spiritual institutions in both North and South America. Alina possesses the unique gift of speaking directly to the soul by opening and becoming the instrument of wisdom of the Akashic records. It will be a wonderful night to listen to Let's Find Out, and to find out this fantastic information. Everybody is interested in their soul purpose, as well as their past lives. When you wrap that all up, you have the records of the Akashic. So make sure that you listen next week, January 15th, when my guest will be Alina Lynn Lieberman, author of The Principles of Dynamic Manifestation, as received through the Akashic records. So be sure to join us next week, January 15th, on Let's Find Out.
You're listening to Let's Find Out on BBSRadio.com. Station 2. If internet radio has a name, it's BBS Radio, the number one live internet radio talk show on the planet. It's Let's Find Out. An honored guest come every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, dial 888-429-5471. Again, that's 888-429-5471 in the U.S. and Canada. If you're just tuning in and would like to hear this show in its entirety tomorrow, you can download it at the archive link at bbsradio.com. Remember, if it's not mainstream, it's BBS Radio. So now, let's find out with host Elizabeth Joyce.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman arrived from Rome, she wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together, the same in the rain or sun. Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Those who seen us know that not a thing can come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord help the sister who comes between me and my man.
This is is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out, and I'm so enjoying that song, Sisters, by Rosemary Clooney, which was very popular back in the 50s when I grew up with my three sisters. Tonight, my guest is Angela, and she is here to talk about her sister, and nothing can break them up, not even death. She wrote a book, and tell us about your book.
This book is called Love Never Dies, From Heaven My Sister Speaks. And it's about my journey into the afterlife as I try to unravel the truth about life, that life continues after the physical death.
So what in the world surprised you the most about your experience while writing this book and before?
Well, what surprised me the most is it left me without a doubt that life does continue after the physical death, that there really is a place that we go to, whether you call it heaven or you call it the spirit world. There is something that happens to us after our physical death, and I truly, truly believe that. The other thing that was noticeable to me in the whole book was the piece on reincarnation, where my sister showed me a past life that we had together, and it was during the Crusades, where we're together watching the Crusades go through our town or village, and she's there because I want her to come and see the Crusade. In this lifetime, she gets run over and killed by the Crusades, and then in this lifetime she explains that we were together again in this lifetime to relieve me of the guilt of her passing, so she passed in this lifetime of her own free will. So that was another thing that really impacted me a lot in the book.
And you know what that defends and explains is karma, the law of karma, because we create karma for our next life while we are living this life. So you're setting up your next life with your actions and decisions in this life, and that's very true. Do you still make contact with both your mother and sister, and how is it continued?
Yes, I do. I don't sit for hours a day anymore, as I said, but I do on the weekends have, on Saturday mornings, I sit quietly for an hour or two on Saturdays, and that's my time when I do, not every single week get messages from them, but it's when I stay attuned and I frequently get information from them. Most recently, as I said, was more inspiration for this next book that I may be writing soon. And also they do give me guidance on my family.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you are helped and you are guided through. And that also gives you strength. It gives your timeline strength as well as your family members, because I'm sure that many of the messages are helpful to everyone. That's good. So I do want to have your email if people want to write and ask you or share with you their experiences. What is your email, Angela?
My email address is speakingwithheaven@gmail.com.
And your website?
Is also speakingwithheaven.com. And if you go onto my website, you can just click email, and the email will come straight to me, or you can just type it out, speakingwithheaven@gmail.com.
That's wonderful. And one last question. What in your personal life has changed since writing the book and going through this experience? And also, since the book has been out, it's been out a year or so. So what has changed in your life, Angela?
Well, the people aspect has changed for me. So, of course, as we've all experienced loss of loved ones, we become more compassionate for others who have lost their loved ones. And so that has opened up a whole new door for me. I frequently speak to other people who have lost their loved ones and, you know, comfort them, and they comfort me, and we talk about them and we share. I also feel that I have a lot more patience, understanding. I feel like I enjoy life in the such that I appreciate things a lot more. Nature, I appreciate the seasons, the flowers. I appreciate life a lot more now, knowing how precious it can be and it can be taken so quickly.
That's really interesting because you spoke about the Wizard of Oz and from going from black and white to color. And I think that's almost what's happened to you. Your sister sent you that energy and now you're living it.
Oh, yes, that's a very good comparison, yes. I feel like I have woken up to life, and also I understand the importance of life. All throughout the book, my mother and my sister, they talk about love, about the love energy, about that is what makes life purpose, is loving one another, being loved, giving love, and being compassionate and appreciative of love and life.
One of my dear invisible guides said to me one day, the greatest gift you can give another human being is to put a smile on their face. And I think that's true.
I do too, and I'm smiling to myself right now as you say that, because again, what's changed in my life, I actually do smile a lot more, something I never thought I would do after losing Mum and Linda. I didn't think I'd ever want to smile again, and now I smile a lot more often, a lot more frequently, and I smile at other people, at strangers, and it's just it's just wonderful. I just feel this love for other people a lot more than I ever could have imagined.
Well, you know, the sacredness of it all is that we all have a life. We all want the same thing. We want our lives, we want our love, we want our families, and we want comfort. Comfort is an important word, because when you can comfort others, then you bring comfort to yourself and your heart, and there seems to be a beautiful merging that comes together where love can grow. And that's so important. It is getting more and more important as we go through these big changes in 2017. So what parting words do you have, Angela? We are coming to the end of Let's Find Out.
I do want to say that our loved ones, they do continue to live on in heaven and the spirit world, and they are all around us. And they are here because they send their love. They send their love to you and to everybody. And it's important to know that.
So don't be afraid. Just walk in the light, right?
Exactly.
Well, this has been wonderful. I really appreciate your taking the time tonight and for sharing with us your tragedy and joy about your sister's departing, as well as your mother. Thank you for coming, Angela.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Akashic Records. And we have a lot of information coming in. Alina Lieberman will be with us. And it's going to be very interesting to see her presentation about what the Akashic Records are. The Book of Life is as we live now. We live the Book of Life. And we can go in and we can change the Book of Life in meditation by writing in our desires and creating them down the road. But the Akashic Records is what we've already lived. It is a book that contains every single experience that the soul has had since the soul's inception. So I'm looking forward to next week. Be sure to tune in and listen. Now it's time to get ready for the meditation. And this is the winter meditation. I'm on the East Coast. I'm right in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and we have had our snow. We had about 3 inches over this weekend, and it's our first snow for 2017, as well as our first snow for the season. So may you be warm and cuddly, curl up, get ready for the meditation. This is Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. Thank you for listening, and good night. This is Elizabeth Joyce of Let's Find Out. It is now time for our winter meditation. Sit in a chair with both feet flat on the floor, uncrossed. Take a deep breath and close your eyes. By taking time to regularly reflect, meditate, seek guidance from the quiet within, we can work out many of the problems we face in an active part of our day. Winter in the Northern Hemisphere, with its longer hours indoors, is a time for deeper reflection and meditation on your long-term goals. Winter months can be dark, cold, and long, and there are practices that can support us through these months, keeping us in good balance energetically and mentally. When we are in balance, we are happy and we feel content. Winter's energy can tend to make us more inward than the summer. This going inside season is a quieter time and can be one of the most wonderful and delicious times of the year when we know how to savor the sweet bliss of our inner silence and peace. This quiet time can, however, feel unfamiliar, and some people feel some fear, and so it can make the feelings and emotions unpleasant. In the stillness of winter, old, latent pain and experiences can arise from your memory. Year after year, these feelings can get associated with winter time, and then winter doesn't seem like a pleasant, delightful time of stillness and peace, but rather becomes heavy with darkness and depression. Traditionally, we have celebrations in winter to lighten our spirits and to bring light to our dark times. And we can also get excited about combating the winter and celebrating to make ourselves happy. Sometimes these celebrations can become anxious, like Valentine's Day or Groundhog's Day. Now we feel we're in a pattern of swinging from depression to anxiety throughout the winter, trying to combat the blues and getting hyped up, and then crashing from that hype and falling again into a deeper sadness. It's possible to get our balance back through the winter by adopting a practice of meditation. Meditation makes the peaceful, quiet space of stillness a familiar and enjoyable feeling. It takes time for an imbalanced nervous system to become accustomed to being in balance again and to feeling blissful. It takes time to move from summer to fall to winter. If we take a little time each day to simply sit and be at ease with ourselves, breathe deeply, close our eyes, and feel ourselves within, it can become a more and more natural feeling. Meditation is a training program to remind our nervous system how to feel balanced and steady, easy and strong, quiet and bright, all at the same time. Stillness does not mean dullness or lethargy. In the deep ease of your stillness, you can connect with a space of potential and power. We feel the energy of our life and body. We feel clear. We feel expansion. And we feel the sharp awareness of our mind. Begin breathing. Begin breathing evenly. And let's count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3, 4. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3, 4. In the stillness of winter, we can discover the powerful space of the stillness and train our mind and body to love touching this space every day. This is a part of us. This is our deep subconscious. This is our soul area. Winter then will not be a time of dull depression or anxious business. It will be a sacred time of self-communication and retreat to the God within. With every meditation session, you can begin your own private retreat. This will revitalize you and make you healthier than ever. Start to look forward to the long, dark winter months as a time of year when you can get silent
and be still every day. And you can have deep communion with your angels, your guides, and yourself. Now stop counting and just continue to breathe evenly. Reflect on the day's events. Decide what to do about a situation that may be unresolved for you. Reevaluate your goals if necessary. Plan the next day's actions to harmonize with the best for all concerned, preserving your personal peace of mind in the process. Keep a journal at your side and reflect on your long-range goals. In subsequent meditations, note your progress. Also, a journal used in this way becomes valuable for recording issues that you're going through at the time. Writing is one way to work out a sticky problem in an objective rather than the old emotional way. Finish your meditation with prayers and affirmations for personal peace and world peace. And when you're done, stand up, stretch, and feel refreshed. Some affirmations you might want to use is, I relinquish the turmoil in my heart. I am finding new solutions to old problems. I choose love, life, and alignment with the flow of God's plan. I will not be afraid to go where the universe leads me. Take a deep breath. Release the breath. Take another deep breath and release the breath. May peace and joy be with you throughout the winter months. And remember, silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. You are bright. You are an art form of God. You are a soul and extension of God's energy. Your art is what you do when no one can tell you exactly how to do it. Your art is the act of taking personal responsibility, challenging the status quo, and changing people when they look at it. Take another deep breath and drink in your strength, your peace, and your love.